The world has changed a lot over the last several years, and there's many industries that have been adversely and negatively affected by that, and the career outlook in those industries has been tarnished or damaged maybe for years to come, which has put a lot of people in a pinch and looking for the possibility of a pivot. We've put an increasing amount of focus on unlocking the power of certificate programs, which enable us to quickly pivot into a new career in a very cost-effective manner, unlocking fantastic income potential and remote work flexibility. For those of you that are maybe for the first time considering making a similar transition, let me encourage you to check out Salesforce as a potential option. It's hard to overstate how amazing the growth potential in this particular industry is and how amazing the starting salary is, even for people that are literally working their first job in this role with no prior experience. For more information, to find out what it is, what it would actually entail, and whether it might be right for you, just go to chooseify.com/career. That's chooseify.com/career.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, everyone. I am so excited about this episode. I know that if you've been with us for the last couple of months, you've kind of picked up. We've been leaning into college. It seems to be about that time of year. A lot of people are thinking about it. And we also know that the college educational process is going through this giant inflection point. There's this debate about whether college should just be free for everyone. And that's a political debate that we as individuals don't have a whole lot of control over. What we do have control over are our actual choices and how much we decide we want to spend on college. And for that, Brad and I wanted to go back and bring one of our favorite guests on of all time. And he hasn't been on in a long time. In fact, he's actually gone through a name change. He's gone through several life changes. Like, things get really interesting. We're bringing on the millionaire educator back to the show. And he used to go by a nom de guerre, which I just love trying to say out loud, Ed Mills, which was a play. It took me longer than I care to admit to realize that was a play on the millionaire educator, Ed Mills. But his actual name, Jerry Bourne, is an even cooler individual. And what he's going to do today, we're going to talk about how he was able to pull off 2 years of college in 59 days for less than $30. And while, you know, part of this is just understanding the opportunities that are out there and optimizing, and it may not be the exact same thing to you, we could probably share how you'll be able to get that first 2-3 years of college for far less than $10K, no matter what your circumstances are. That's the possibilities that are out there. Jerry looks for these opportunities. And right now, as we realize that college is going through this type of inflection point, this is not the time to say, you know what, I'm just going to try and save $400,000 and just try to pay whatever they ask. We're just going to pay whatever they ask. That doesn't seem like a winning strategy when you're pursuing financial independence. So with that in mind, I'm so excited, Brad, to have Jerry Bourne back on his episode, you know, episode 13 of the podcast, where we talked about free money, controlling your tax rate, and how the unfair advantages for teachers and public service employees for pursuing financial independence. That has been some of our most impactful content to date. And I think today, for completely different reasons, will be so also.
Yeah, I'm incredibly excited. And it's hard to believe we haven't had Jerry actually here live on the podcast in 3+ years. He's sent in a bunch of voicemails and is a great resource of the entire show, a friend of our show. So it's really, really cool to have him back on. And to your point, there is basically 20 years of disruption in the higher education system going on right now, right in the next 12 months. We're seeing something that's expedited. We've always known this is coming. There's a reckoning coming. It's just not plausible to spend $60,000 a year. And we are seeing that expedited here live in front of us, in large part due to this COVID crisis. So we could not possibly ask for a better time to have Jerry come back and talk us through this. So with that, Jerry, welcome back to Choose FI.
Thanks for having me, guys. You know, I hear my name mentioned on the show occasionally. I'm always flattered. So I'm glad to be here. I look forward to talking about what I've found out here as far as higher ed and some of the changes taking place.
Awesome. So let me just tell our audience, I don't want to dictate everything that we're going to talk about, but a couple kind of key themes that I think we're going to be able to tackle in this particular episode. We're going to be able to talk about what you actually did, how you were able to get basically 2 years of college credit for less than $30 and in under 2 months or right around 2 months. We're going to be able to talk about CLEP testing, how that plays into this, and also as a strategy that's out there, because we really haven't talked about it to this point with any real degree of confidence, and it's a winning strategy that's available. And we're also going to get into really just some hardcore savings tactics. I mean, the millionaire educator is, you know, him and his wife, they were able to become millionaires on teacher salaries. And every single year, their ability to sock away major money has been amplified by their intention and their determination to see this actually happen. So what started as an aspirational goal has now become a reality. They are the millionaire educators, and you can too. So with that, Jerry, let's start with 2 years of college in 60 days. How is that possible?
Let's see. I'm always poking around to see what I can find as far as what's going on in higher ed. My son is 14 and he'll be in college here soon. I deal with students every day, so I always want to give them some insights. So when the COVID crisis hit, I forget how I came across it, but I saw that organization Sophia Learning, sophia.org. They were offering free college courses until the end of July 31st. So I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And so I took a course just to see. I think I took ancient Greek philosophers because I didn't have that on a transcript. And I'm by no means an expert in the field now, but I took it and I think I did it in like 3 days. There's a lot of reading PDF files and, you know, there's like a homework section. Anyway, you know how it is, obsessive people like me. When you bank one credit, I thought, well, let's see. I was thinking bank a few more. And then I realized, wow, 10 courses at 30 would be a whole year of college. And that gave me a little goal. And I started doing it. And like I said, they were free all through that point. So anyway, I set a goal for myself, a year of college within a month. I believe I did that. And then I was shooting for 2 years of college within 2 months. So I believe I started April 12th and I finished July 9th. I think I'm just off the top of my head. But at any rate, I was able to get a whole boatload of courses. It's all there on one page and it's all on half of another page. You know, U.S. history, U.S. history 2, art history, art history 2, so on and so forth. And I'm working on a blog post where I'll lay these all out so you can see exactly what I did. But at any rate, it ended up when it was all said and done, sending the transcript and having them added to my college transcript, it was $30.25.
Wow.
So that comes out to $1.47 per three-hour course. And it's totally legitimate, totally, what's the word I'm looking for?
Accredited.
It's accredited, yes. I mean, that blows my mind, the fact that 2 years of college were done in 59 days for no money. So
Jerry, so we're taking a college course in 3 days. On average.
What the hell was I doing for the whole four other months I was in the class?
But, you know, clearly it begs the question, what is that? How could you possibly learn anything in 3 days? Like, is this just to get credits? Are you learning? Like, what, you know, and I'm not implying either is good, bad, or indifferent. Honestly, there's a system and we play by the rules. But in your estimation, did you learn a lot, like akin to a college course? Or was this just to get credits?
Well, yeah, I should have said that. I took this from strictly a credentialing perspective, and I was seeing how many credits I could get. Now, to be fair, I had background in some of these courses. I'd say roughly half, you know, from my MBA and my Davidson undergrad. But I do pretty much know what a curriculum should look like for a college, and it covered the same range pretty much. You know, these things are approved by the American Council of Education. So you just can't willy-nilly throw this course out there. It has to follow certain guidelines. Did I go pretty quickly? Yes. And one of the reasons is that it is just pass-fail. So if I get 100 or 70, I get a pass credit. You know, it didn't help my GPA in any way. And the other thing is I was able to go very quickly because it's open book format. You know, so sometimes, you know, you got to really dig in the weeds to find answers. But, you know, I would say if a person is a good test taker or above average test taker, they could do these courses. I won't say easily, but They can do it. You don't have to do them in 3, 4, 5 days. You've got up to 60 days to do them. And I've even read that you can do add a 30-day extension if you feel like you need it. So you've got up to potentially 90 days to finish a course.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, ultimately, if we have an absurd system, right? And the point is, you're trying to get these credits to ultimately get a credential. And I think, you know, we talked about this before we hit record. A lot of what you take in your first year, you said this, and I'll cede the floor to you, but a lot of what you take in your first year at a four-year university that you're spending maybe $30,000, $40,000, $60,000 on is just a rehash of what you learned in high school anyway. So if you can do this for a very low cost or nominal or free, why wouldn't you, right?
Exactly. You know, I think U.S. history, you have to take that in high school. World history, well, that's 12 hours you can do through Sophia. Things like, you know, intro to sociology. You know, if you're not going to be a sociology major, that's probably all you need. You can get that. Intro to psych. And a lot of times you have these classes in high school. American Lit, British Lit. They don't offer those at Sophia, but there are CLEP tests for those. So yeah, along the lines of your thinking there, I'm really big on banking credit. Like, for example, my son's going to be a freshman in high school next year, and he's slated to take Western Civ or World History. He's going to take the World History CLEP test at the end of his class because I'm going to have him try to bank that credit. And there are study guides you can use to get ready for that, and it's pass-fail. I believe you need a 50 out of 80 questions to get the credit. But you'll never hear the universities talk about this because $60,000 is a lot of money, right? They want butts in seats, paying tuition, many times to the form of student loans. So yeah, the first 2 years, that needs to be streamlined, no doubt about it.
And what I love is the qualifier. Well, we have to teach kids like how to learn. You know, it's more of the process of teaching them how to learn so that when they then do get into these more advanced classes, they're going to have the skills necessary to then learn the real information. Like that sort of qualifier as a person or a tendency, a questioner, I'm like, well, what was high school for? What happened the first time around? And there's just someone that actually did it right. And they spent a full 6 months learning a topic. You know, when you're at the age of 28, reflecting back on what you learned that freshman year in college and those classes, well, what do you remember? What do you remember from your world history class that you took 8 years ago now that you're in your first job? But you paid $60,000 for it. So, you know, I bet it stuck more, right?
Right. Well, and always remember, what were you like at 18 and 20? I was worst case scenario. I was a maniac. But I could rebound.
It helps when you're 9'6".
So, Jerry, we're talking here about one particular program, right, through Sophia.org. But, you know, this is not an advertisement for Sophia. This is just the program you used. I'm curious about a couple things in this entire industry, let's say. So are there other similar programs that you've seen to Sophia? And can you compare and contrast them with, let's say, you know, for decades or at least 10 plus years, there's been those, I think people call them MOOCs, right? The massive open online courses through like Harvard and MIT. And as I understand it, those do not give you college credit, but you're taking the same course that you'd take if you were at Harvard or MIT, et cetera. Can you talk us through other options that you've seen to Sophia and then maybe why someone would consider doing one of these MOOCs instead of Sophia, or if that's just absurd, if you would always go with Sophia?
Well, let's see. Sophia is the one I have worked on. However, I've noticed there's a website, ACE, the American Council of Education, that I mentioned. You can look at the various organizations that grant credit through them. And it's very interesting. The S page, and I'll send you guys that link to put in the show notes. You know, it has Sophia, Sailor Academy, and I haven't taken their courses, but they have free college courses. You have to take a test at the end, and it might be a $25 or $45 testing fee. There's something called Shmoop, S-H-M-O-O-P University. I believe that's a Yiddish word. But they offer a number of courses, and it's like $85 a month. And so you could probably hammer out 2 years. They seem to have a lot of lit classes. And then there's Straight Line, another thing I was just looking at this morning. A lot of people use that. It's like a $100 fee a month and then $50 per course. And they offer, I think, about 30 courses. So those are very similar to Sophia. They're kind of like MOOCs, and you do them online and you get the credit that way. But this is probably a good time to mention the good old CLEP test The CLEP test is a college level exam you can take and get college credit. They've been around forever and very few people use them, but there are 33 CLEP tests and some of them grant 6 hours of credit. I know you can get 12 hours with the Spanish language test. So, you know, if your degree is 120 credit hours and you're getting 12 from one test, more power to you, right? But anyway, I wanted to mention one organization for CLEP test. It's called modernstates.org. And the founder is a guy named Steve Klinsky. And apparently he's a wealthy hedge fund manager. And he got so tired of hearing about how expensive college is. And he just had all these online courses geared to prep people for the CLEP test. And I have done some of those courses. I haven't taken the CLEPs from that yet, but I will briefly explain how those work. It has a homework section and it has big PDF files and you work through that. I forget what grade you have to have, but when you work through that, you submit it and they will send you a voucher to take that CLEP test for free. Okay. And then the only thing you have to pay is your sitting fee at the university you take that test at. But when you pass your CLEP test, they'll even reimburse you for your sitting fee. So that's free college credit. And of course, let me mention one other one that's free college credit, and it's called DSST. It's at getcollegecredit.com. A lot of people in the military use this as well. They have 38 tests. They offer some classes that are worth upper level credits. You know, people who are trying to streamline a degree, one of the problems they usually have is acquiring their 30 hours of upper level credits. Well, some of these they have for testing, okay? And one last one I'll mention here, study.com has a program where you can go for $99 a month. And I believe you can take 2 classes per month. And they also offer a lot of upper level credits that you could use to fulfill that 30 hours of upper level credits. So obviously you're probably not going to pick one of these. You might do a combination. It'd be just like people's FIPATH. It's going to be unique to the student, but there are options out there galore. And you'll never hear an advisor at school talking about these because it cuts into, I guess, their bottom line.
All right. So you've actually given us so many options here, and we're not going to just walk away from this. We're going to dive into each of them. I wanted to go back to Sophia because I think probably people up to this point, they've heard that and they're like, all right, as of this moment, they're still thinking maybe I should go do Sophia. But what you were able to pull off was time specific. So Sophia was offering free classes up through like maybe the end of July. I'm just curious, like for your kids, would you still do this or would this be worth it as an approach if you're paying full price? What is the price? How much would it cost you to get those same credits, you know, when they're not running this special offer, just so people have that information?
Yeah, great question. Because even if you're going to pay full freight on Sophia, which is $330 per 3-hour course, that can even be discounted because it seems every time I took a course and passed the first test, I got a $50 voucher for my next course. So you could argue you could get a lot of the classes for $280. If you took all their courses, I believe you could, for $8,000 or less, get 82 credit hours is what they have of core and electives. So $8,000 to have almost 3 years of college and you don't have to drive to a college. There's no textbooks to buy because everything's included. And you don't even have to drive to take tests because it's all done via your computer. They verify it's you by when you test in a line they have, there's a way to verify that it's you. So yeah, even if you paid full tuition, full rate, $8,000 for nearly 3 years of college credit, that's a pretty awesome deal, I would say.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I guess I'm curious, where do these transfer to? Like, what's the ultimate point, right? I don't imagine Sophia is giving out degrees, right? So talk me through like what happens with these credits.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little complicated to some people because most people are, they have their heart set on going to one university. Well, much like an AP test, if your school requires a 5 in the AP test, you might not get credit for a 4 or 3. So same thing with these type of tests. If you go to Sophia, you will see all the schools that they have articulation agreements with. And if you click through them, and I know the Excelsior College, that's the college I use, it tells me what course it matches up to in their course catalog, okay? And it says right there, guaranteed transfer to Excelsior College. Let me just give a little background on this. Previously, it was Excelsior College and 2 other colleges that were considered like the big three for like alternative degrees. That was Charter Oak State College in Connecticut and Thomas Edison State University in New Jersey. Well, it's more than the big three now. You know, Purdue Global, Colorado State or Colorado State University Global, and a number of other universities. You'll see them when you go exploring some of these sites. There are a lot of options. You're going to have to decide where you're going to want to send these. I always liked Excelsior just because they'll take up to, I think, 113 hours of 120 for a degree. So really, you would do three college courses with Excelsior, and then you could finish out your degree. But, you know, you need to look at those lists and see where you might want to send your credits. And here's what I would always argue. If I have 3 years of college credit, 3.5, what have you, and my university here, let's say I want to go to Georgia Tech or UGA, I'm here in Georgia, and they say, we don't take any of those, at that point, I'm going university shopping. I'm going to find a university to send these to. I'm going to graduate there, and I'll go to UGA or Georgia Tech for grad school. That's the way I view it, because you know how it is. Once you do your undergrad, it's a different reality. So eventually, you're going to have to transfer these Sophia credits or whoever you're taking these courses through to a university that will give you the credit. And you can see on the list on Sophia what exactly your options are.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm looking at their guaranteed transfer partners. And to your point, yeah, there's certainly more than three. It looks like by my count, there's 31.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, Purdue University is a brand name university.
That's
a guaranteed transfer partner. And to your point, like, you've done all these credits in the last 2 months, and those could transfer to get you a Purdue University degree. That's crazy.
Let's play this out, because I think it's really important for people to understand this. What is a year of Purdue cost, would you estimate, Brad, without actually having looked at tuition? What would be kind of like a price for that?
Yeah, I would think for out of state, I would imagine it would be the normal 40, 50 plus thousand.
Okay, so let's say you follow this track. You only need your last year. So you're at 40 to 50,000 for your last year, which you want to get at Purdue because you want to walk away with this, you know, this brand name school that you went to. When you graduate, 3 years of Sophia, 3 years of this hodgepodge of credits that you've been able to put together because you've been scheming on this for the last couple of years. When you graduate from Purdue, what does your degree say? I mean, I think it's really important for people. Where did you get your college education, millionaire educator, in that scenario?
Yeah, I would assume it's going to say Purdue University. It's part of the Purdue system. I don't think you're going to get an inferior degree. And it's an accredited university, first and foremost. You're not going to have to go explain your degree to anybody.
All right, now let's get a little bit.
Jonathan, actually, that is your situation with what you did with community college, right?
Well, it's even better than that. Mine was a baby version of that was accessible to me at the time because I didn't have the information we're talking about right now. But it was certainly, 2 years of community college, guaranteed admission to a state school. I went to Virginia Tech. You're right, Brad. This is where I was going. I graduated with a bachelor's degree from Virginia Tech, although I had done the first 2 years at community college. But my bachelor's degree just says Virginia Tech on it. So Jerry, the other point I wanted to make is the age that you could start these classes with Sophia. So, like, do you need to be 18 to sign up? I know you were talking about your son was, you know, he's 14 years old. Like, what's the age requirement to get started working on the first 3 years of college?
Yeah, I never saw anything on the website about a minimum age to take any of the courses. So being that my son's going to be a high school freshman next year, my wife and I both agreed that he should probably take the college readiness course, which really focused on things like study skills and, you know, being aware of things that might be stressing you out and who do you talk to if you have a problem. Very basic course. It was the only course that I did all summer that had any essay. And, you know, I just made sure his essay was nice and he sent it in. So he started with that and it gave him a little confidence. And then he wanted to take the intro to information technology course. Well, you know, basic computer course. And, you know, he's on a computer enough, so he did fine in that. And then from there, he's taken some other things that down the road could serve as electives, you know, intro to ethics, intro to religion. He was interested in that course. He took that. And he did one other one. It escapes my mind right now. But yeah, he's done 15 hours. And it doesn't matter. As long as you can, you know, read and complete the homework and pass the test, you're okay.
That's amazing. So 15 hours, that's a semester. That's 1/8 of a traditional 4-year college right there.
Yeah, I told him you have 12.5% of your degree done. And it just kind of blew his mind. He doesn't understand how a degree works, but that's the way I phrase it.
But you do. And that's the great thing. So that actually is what I want to talk about next. So you have done more research about this than anybody I know. And you have a son who is right in this age bracket where, okay, your exact research is going to impact him. What's like the prototypical path that you would advise someone else or your son in this very specific case? Like, what do you think with your knowledge of the system, what should he do?
You know, I think I'm a Spanish teacher, so I generally have kids who are planning to go to college. And, you know, there's a wide range of motivations and abilities in that spectrum. But generally, I have pretty good students. And I would tell that type of student, look, pay attention in any class you're in. And I would take, you know, some of these things I've mentioned, like the CLEP through modernstates.org. And I would try to bank credit throughout high school. You know, at that age, you have a lot of mental energy, a lot of motivation. I would just make it count in high school. I would be earning college credits during that time. I'd be chipping away at it because, you know, 1 year leads to 2 years. I think it's very doable to get 2 years over the course of 4 years of high school. That leaves you in an enviable position. If you can get more and streamline your degree, even better from my perspective, because in the FI movement, I don't hear people talk about some of the, I view it as potentially lost years, 18 to 22. Because I'll be honest, wow. I went to Davidson. I went to a good college. Truth be told, I shouldn't have been there academically. I was, you know, I was there to play basketball and I did my work, but I wasn't always the best student. But I drank way too much beer. I did way too much goofing off. And that's what a lot of 18 to 22 year olds do. This would kind of help them maybe, I don't know, learn some work skills, maybe take some technical training and start earning some money. I don't know. I just think what potentially college can really set you on a bad path with a student loan and let's just say a lot of bad habits.
Yeah, no, I certainly hear you. So right, you are hoping that your son through CLEP testing and maybe some other dual enrollment or some such, he's going to get about 2 years worth of college done by the time he graduates high school. And then what? Will you advise him to get a job at 18 and also take some online courses? Like, I'm not trying to grill you here, but like, I'm trying to think of what I'm going to advise my kids. So this is selfish for me.
Well, yeah, I would like him to get at least 2 years and, you know, he could do online courses. My big thing is he's got, I think, $60,000 in his college accounts, Ed Savings and 529. And, you know, what is that now? 2 years? I'll be honest, I'm a little disgusted with the whole system at this point. I'd rather that money go to him somehow or go to some other relatives. But at any rate, he's going to get his college degree and kind of learn about what he wants to do. I know personally, I'm hoping to go to language school with him, maybe in Montreal one day for a year.
Nice.
Or maybe we'll go to Perugia in Italy to learn Italian. You know, I think that would be a year well spent, learning how to speak Italian or French. And you don't have to sweat piecemealing your degree because, you know, Jonathan, he was going to be a pharmacist. You were going to be an accountant. You know, I hate to inform you guys, but a lot of students, they don't know what they're going to do. They're not really, they don't have a lot of single focus. And if my son suddenly says he wants to be a doctor down the road, we'll worry about that then. But right now we're just going to try to get him his undergrad. And so he can kind of explore life and what he can do. And if he wants to do something down the road, he can go to grad school. That's how I reinvented myself.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? He can explore life, right? Because that's usually the counterpoint that people say, which is, oh, but the college experience, right? You learn so much about yourself. You're living on your own. But your counterpoint to that is he could go live in Italy for a year, right? He could take online classes for next to free and live in Italy and have this amazing true life experience, not a carefully cultivated life experience on a college campus.
I was just thinking out loud. While you're spending 6 months in your intro to humanities class that Ed just took in 3 days, this individual is taking a 1 year immersive, you know, learning a language and the culture for less than your intros to humanities classes costing you. Like, that's the reality here. Wow. Yeah. You get to explore life when you can look at the problem a little bit differently.
Well, I would just say this, you know, instead of spending 4 years in college, there are a number of language schools throughout the world. There's cooking school, there are tech schools where you can get hard skills. And if you've already got a degree in your back pocket, you've got a different reality than most people. All right. That pressure would be off.
We go to school and we take on $100,000 in student loan debt for a degree. What you're describing is if we understand that that's a bad trade-off, let's do the degree for as inexpensively as possible. And then let's take that free time and focus on skills, which is actually what we'll be using for the duration of our life. If a college is giving us both, fantastic. If they're not, let's fix this and not wait for the political system to fix it for us.
Amen. I'm not waiting. And never forget, it's very hard to get a student loan debt discharged through bankruptcy.
Yeah.
It's an anchor.
I want to talk about something here. There was a couple points that you made. We need to circle back because you were saying, I think I'm going to have my son try to CLEP test his way out. I think that's going to be a strategy. So, and I wanted to make see what that at a granular level, what that actually looks like. So are we describing a process where he's already taking world history? So because he's in that AP class or that class in high school, whatever it is, that's the one that he's focusing on testing out of. Like he's getting a synergy. He's being taught in the classroom and then he's going and getting a study guide to allow him to then also take that and scale it to the CLEP. Or is it in addition to all of his high school work, he's also trying to go through these study guides to learn these additional topics? Like give me a sense for what that looks like in your high schooler's day.
Okay. So as my son proceeds through high school, he's going to be a freshman next year, and he's going to have the following classes. He's going to have world history, and he's going to have, I believe, American government. Those are two tests that you can take via CLEP. Okay, so in his case, I will get him an account on modernstates.org, and he'll sign up for World History 1 and American government, and he'll do the homework associated with that, which is roughly about 100 multiple choice questions that he works through over time. And it preps you to take the CLEP test. He's a good student. I know he'll do what he's supposed to in class in high school. If he's doing his classwork and he's doing that prep work, I feel very confident he can get 50 out of 80 questions on a CLEP multiple choice test. And the Western Civ, I believe, is also has a part two. So that's potentially 9 hours of college that corresponds to what he's doing in high school. Okay. His sophomore year, he'll have an algebra class that he can CLEP or take via one of these Sophia type options. So there are a number of courses. Let me just focus on English, because your freshman year English, it's basically analyzing literature. So, you know, you learn about metaphor and simile and poetry. And well, there's a CLEP test analyzing and comparing lit, basically. It's worth 6 credit hours if you pass it. All right. Then there's American Lit, you take your junior year here in Georgia, and your senior year, you take British Lit. Those are each worth 6 credit hours. He's going to have those classes in high school. So I'm going to steer him toward those CLEP prep tests on modernstates.org. And so as he passes those classes and he works through the homework, we'll go over to probably Valdosta State University. He'll take his test. If he gets the 50 out of 80, he's just banked 2 college classes. You see, so there's easily a year and a half, 2 years of college that directly corresponds to what he's taking in high school, okay? And I'm not even talking about what he's getting in Sophia courses. I think it'd be very easy for him to do 3 years of college. So he'd have his core and most of his electives done. Keep in mind, here in Georgia, we have a program called Move On When Ready, where you get to take college classes while you're still in high school. He's probably going to do that to do things like, you know, your freshman composition courses, some of those courses. So there's just a whole wide range of things you can do for a student to help him earn the credits along the way.
So Jerry, when you started writing about this, and I remember you wrote an article, you were talking about Excelsior and how you're using it or how you would use it, that sort of thing. I mean, literally 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I wasn't totally like I was a new parent or maybe I was about to have my firstborn at that point. Like I was excited, but it was also past the point where I could really benefit personally from it. I always had a little asterisk. Yeah. At some point, we're going to circle back to this. There's something here. It seems almost now it's almost more imperative just for our society that people understand the tactics are available. I'm still grappling. Well, you said Georgia has Move On With Ready. I'm currently looking into, does the counties here, do they offer dual enrollment programs? I don't even know that answer right now. I still don't know the answer at the local county, and it's not applied consistently across the board. But what we've talked about up to this point, everyone in every city, state around the country can do this. You can do it. And that is what is so impactful. But even more than that, I wanted to try to, what I'm trying to do is very much not take anything for granted and let people realize that this is a glide path. If you just start doing just a little bit each and every day, like you can make this so easy. the friction point to me comes in mind that you have all these different types of things going on. You've got a CLEP test over here. You've got a dual enrollment here. You've got a Sophia class over here. Yeah. You've got, maybe you took another organization because they had one, but you're in like six or seven different ecosystems as you're making this plan. How do you bring them all together? Like, how do you get them all into one transcript that says, look, I got 3 years done?
Yeah, that's a good question. Just keep in mind, you're always going to have to, at some point, to send your credits to your final university that's going to grant you a degree. Now, in my case, as the article that you're referencing, what was it? How to Earn a College Degree in 12 Months for, what was it? $7,500, I believe is what the title was. I identified Excelsior College as one I would use, me personally, but that's just my preference. But you're going to send all those transcripts to your university, and they're going to put them all on one transcript, and that's how you know they're banked. And it's going to be a running tally. You know, my Excelsior transcript now has the 62 hours I did. It's got a CLEP test that I did back in 2011, and it's also got a DSST course, actually personal finance. I didn't have that on a transcript. I took a test and got it. I did those tests back in 2011 because I needed 6 hours of college credit to recertify my teaching certificate, and I didn't want to go to college and sit in classrooms. So I took 2 tests and I got 9 college credits. But it's all because it's on an official transcript at Excelsior College, which is a fully accredited university. So no matter where you're getting your credits from, just keep in mind, you're going to send them to your ultimate destination.
Awesome. Fantastic. So your final destination, there is a little bit of strategy here. There's some conversations that probably need to be had. Like, for instance, Excelsior has really positioned themselves to be incredibly flexible towards these alternate forms of education. So you, it sounds like, based on your experience and that of the CLEP community, a community of people that are sharing tactics on how to do this, Excelsior is your best friend in terms of just making this easy. But per what you were looking up, Brad, on Sophia, there's actually 31 colleges that with Sophia say, hey, we're very friendly to Sophia. So if you're now merging, you know, Sophia plus CLEP test plus dual enrollment plus a couple of these other modern state, a couple other things that you used, we know Excelsior is super flexible. We suspect that these other schools are very progressive in what they're actually allowing, but your mileage may vary. And so you need to think about what is your overarching strategy and be ready to pivot a little bit depending on what information you hear back. Is that accurate, Jerry? Like, there's no like one consistent approach across all these 30 schools.
Correct. When you look on Sophia, you'll notice that, look, I'm just going to pick a university. I'll say Purdue Global. They have their list of Sophia courses they'll grant credit. I don't think it's quite as extensive as what Excelsior will allow for, but that's okay. You know, say you get 45 hours, that's a year and a half. So, and every college is a little different. You know, they might say you can only do up to a year or 2 years of college like that, including CLEP. So there might be kind of an overall cap. That is why I always liked Excelsior. You know, there was pretty much, they had something in the catalog. Basically, it doesn't matter where you learned. They don't care. They recognize what you learned. So yeah, just take a look at those other degree options and see what works for you. It just seems that for what I wanted to do, Excelsior was my best option. And like I mentioned to you guys earlier, I originally went there. They have something called One Transcript Service to consolidate all my transcripts. You know, when I applied for a job, and as you guys know, I like to job jump, I got tired of having to send multiple, like 10 transcripts for a teaching job. I just send them one now.
Nice.
So that was worth it for me. So little non sequitur, sorry.
No, I think that is important because you are getting these credits from so many different institutions, and you have isolated this Excelsior one in particular as a place to really consolidate them all. So that's just a cool little tip for anybody out there. And it's interesting, and I want to just put a note on this that you said, some schools might allow different credits from these organizations like Sophia. So Excelsior, it seems like, accepts a nearly unlimited amount, whereas, and we don't have the answer because we haven't done the research on this, but Purdue might accept far fewer. You might not be able to get 100 credits at Sophia for free, waltz over to Purdue Global Online and take 3 or 4 classes and get a degree, right?
Right. Yeah, I would doubt you could do that. But that's why, you know, people need to dig in and figure out what they want to study and where they want to study. You know, I wish I was smart enough that I could like understand every one of these options, but it is infinite, you know?
And to your point before about degree shopping, you can also have prestige shopping, frankly. Like, that's an interesting way of looking at this. If that matters to you, then maybe getting the degree from Purdue, which is a globally recognized university that people know that name, maybe it is worth paying a little extra. Like, I was just at Purdue Global's website, and it seems like you could get an accounting degree from them for about $60,000 online across 4 or 5 years. It looked like 180 credits. Now, that's assuming you got zero from Sophia. So let's say you can get 2 years. That probably knocks it down sub $40,000. Now, for you, in your mind, you might be saying, who on earth would pay $40,000? But somebody else might be comparing and saying, wow, I can get a bachelor's of science in accounting from Purdue for only $30,000 or $40,000. That might be pretty darn good to them, right? So it, to each his own, is ultimately my point here. And it's cool that you have so many options. And it seems those guaranteed transfer programs are the critical part, because I would not want to do all this work and get 60 credits at Sophia and then try to go somewhere else. And they say, tough luck. That's not going to work. So
I can weigh in there with personal experience, as you were pointing out, Brad. So I actually did do community college transferring to Virginia Tech for the last 2 years. I did not have the strategy that we're talking about when I took my classes at Virginia Tech. I just took whatever looked good on the transcript. And even then, with the in-state relationship, which is not nearly as complex as what we're describing with these unaffiliated, like these two, this community college that I went to and this state college, they're bound by the state, right? They are both operating with help from the state budget. They didn't accept probably close to 15 to 20 credits of what I had at the community college because I didn't do my homework ahead of time and find out which credits were guaranteed to transfer. I had taken some that just didn't have a match on the transcript, and that just was too bad. Should have looked, I guess. And so this is the point. If I'm going to do work on Sophia personally, and again, I'm not making a dogmatic call to someone else, but I'm not going to take things that I'm not confident about how those are going to be utilized towards the progress of this degree. You know, maybe if it was a particularly interesting thing and I just love the educational process so much, but in the context of someone that's trying to optimize their college degree process, I'm certainly not going to do that, right? And just have the plan, know where you're going to land, work your way backward. Like, I might actually, instead of starting with what does Sophia have, I might actually start with what's my final destination and then what do they accept, and then build my strategy around that. If it's Excelsior, basically I know it's like a blank whatever, just fill in what you want. If it's Purdue, I'm like, what does Purdue take? Okay, what does Sophia offer? What else does Purdue take? And then I talk to the admissions counselor at Purdue to tell them a few of the things that I'm working on, a CLEP test that I'm doing, et cetera. And I would just make sure that admissions counselor had given me kind of a positive stamp that this is in fact a winning strategy. This will in fact work. I think it's really important that you kind of start thinking about it through the lens of where you're going to land after you've done this.
I'd add to that, Jonathan, that I would really use any free sources I could get, and I would be almost greedy. For example, the Modern States for CLEP testing, because I'm sure you know many people who they got down their last semester and they were shy two electives to get their graduation requirement in. I would rather, you know, I know we're all big about optimizing in the Phi community, but, you know, let's say you bank, you get 140 credits through testing and you don't apply all those to your degree. You haven't lost anything. I'd say just bank as many as you can along the way. If you think you could pass it, I would take it. And you'll be thankful down the road. Because think about this. I did my MBA. They had all these prerequisites I had to go back and take. So if I could get some of those done along the journey, maybe I don't have to take financial accounting and managerial accounting for MBA. I've already done it.
Okay.
Just food for thought.
I'm trying to put that in context. Give me some help with what you mean, because it sounds like you're actually rounding out my position that I was making a second ago, and I didn't totally follow. Are you saying that if credits don't go towards your degree, they might be beneficial? Is that where you were going with that? Because down the road, maybe a graduate degree? Just help me get a sense for what you were saying.
Yeah, you know, additional coursework via testing can also take care of some of your prerequisites for graduate school. For example, I'm very familiar with the MBA. I think there were 18 hours I had to take, or 21 hours, before I could even get into graduate level MBA coursework. You know, intro to finance, management, marketing, things of that nature. Those are all offered in alternative education formats now.
Okay.
So, you know, if you have those, you might have to take them later.
So it'd be a situation where your undergrad landing destination does not accept those, but you have grad plans, or you might have grad plans at some point. And when you get to that point, it turns out that the grad program wants you to have these additional credits, and you'll be glad, even though it didn't transfer to undergrad, you're glad you have them when you got to grad school. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, exactly. Because maybe you don't have a business undergrad, and they say, well, those are just electives, and you don't have a business degree. It's still going to help you down the road.
Very cool.
Give you a quick example. I know a girl here who's going to be a physical therapist. Well, she was finding out that there was coursework she needed to be taking to better prepare her for her graduate degree. But at the undergrad level, they were offered, but they weren't being steered to those courses. So she is now taking these so-called not needed courses, but it's going to help her streamline her graduate degree down the road. That's just a local example I have here. Maybe you've experienced this. A lot of times your academic advisor, they have two or three jobs. They really don't know the course catalog. And I remember that was my experience as an undergrad. I seemed to know more than my advisor because he was having to write publications and teach all these classes and then advise me. The scope was too broad for him. He had a lot of other jobs that were more important.
So, Jerry, one thing that we talked about earlier is how this lost 4 years that we are attributing to the college experience, and really that's the following 8 to 10 years, the lost decade, that is lost to just trying to get back to broke, pay off the student loans. You actually had to deal with some of this. So you're kind of fixing this now in post. You're recognizing all the inefficiencies that were baked into that, but that didn't stop you from aggressively pursuing, you and your wife aggressively pursuing financial independence, and in fact, truly becoming the millionaire educators. And I know one thing that's always been very inspiring to both Brad and myself is, you know, you sharing your savings goals and how you figured out how to control your tax rate, how you were able to send whole paychecks into pre-tax vehicles. And it just seems like each year you've been able to figure out a way to dial that up further on teacher salaries, sometimes job hopping, sometimes leaving and going to a different area or location. And I'd just be curious for you to catch us up on your savings goals for the past year or so. What have you guys been up to?
Well, yeah, we're working again. We started working in August of 2018. And, you know, I like hardcore savings and old habits die hard. Well, we've been able to save more now just because we're older and we have all those catch-up contributions. So our contribution limits are considerable. Let me say that my wife will not be going back to school in the fall. So let me just get to the numbers. 2018, we saved over $58,000 on a partial year. 2019, we saved $130,000. 2020, my wife will work up until August. She'll get paychecks. It should be about $122,000. And theoretically, if I just finish out this year and I'm the only one working, my wife and I should be able to save about $67,000. 2021. So, I mean, that all we're doing is filling the buckets. As you know, we live off 72 T distributions from our IRAs. And then we probably will cannibalize some of my wife's 457 starting in 2021. I know that drives a lot of people crazy in the community. They always say, you're cannibalizing your retirement savings. And, you know, I have no problem pulling from a HELOC as needed. So over 300K since 2018 saved.
On teacher salaries.
And teachers, yeah, just teacher salaries. We had a small side hustle, but no great shakes there. We just fill the buckets, as I've been known to say, to put money on our side of the ledger. I know Jonathan likes that line.
I do. I've repurposed it many times. So let's talk about this. How, just kind of give us a sense for how, what drives the vast majority of this, just at a macro level. So two teacher salaries. I mean, it seems to me like to save $60,000, $70,000 plus a year, you probably need to be making $250,000 plus a year. I mean, these are the types of people that are able to save this sort of money. But tell us a little bit more about how teachers are able to just massively do this and give us a sense. Like, let's assume someone hasn't listened to episode 13. They're hearing this now. Give people a sense for how you're able to pull this off. How are you able to control your tax rate and how are you able to live off of $8,000 a year? You know, that's what you said. I'm only bringing home $8,000 a year.
Yeah, well, we're able to make it work for us because, and I learned this from Brad in the first interview, we have low structural cost. We live in a low cost area of the United States. We're in a place called Statenville, Georgia, in Eccles County, South Georgia, right on the Florida border. And I'll give you an example. We bought a house for $68,000, a 3-2 brick ranch, only owned by one family. Nice place. We don't have to commute a lot. We walk to work because we're about 100 yards from the school. It's a good school. My son likes it there. And there are no restaurants in the town. There's nowhere really to spend money. Well, unfortunately, we both like to cook. So our overhead to live, I mean, $2,500, $3,000 a month, easy. We live very well. That means that we're able to just basically zero out our paychecks. And we just have maybe a little bit left, but always keep in mind, we've got to fill those IRA buckets.
Let's talk about that. So zero out your paycheck. That makes sense to me. I know your story, but an audience that says like, you're doing what to your paycheck? Like I usually try to make my paycheck bigger. That's the entire goal. You're zeroing out your paycheck. Describe why you're zeroing out your paycheck and what HR thinks when you tell them, I don't want you to pay me anything.
Yeah. Zeroing out our paycheck means this. I go see my friend at the office and I hand my contribution sheet for the 403B and the 457 plan. To give you an example, January through May, I did $5,200 a month to my 457 plan. And that means I was able to put $26,000 in those 5 months. And then I had a little bit more money left in my check. I think it was $300. I put it in my 403B. So when it was all said and done, I think I had maybe $100 a month in my paycheck. My wife currently, since she's going to be working for these 8 months, I think she gets $2.70. We've done the same with her paycheck. You know, reason we do that is that money, we don't owe tax on it. It goes to our 403B and 457 plans. So it dramatically lowers our taxable income while also increasing our savings dramatically. It's like the best of both worlds. And it's something I learned to do long ago. And I realized no one ever understands it. That's why you really got to know the people in HR because they don't know what you're doing. So just kind of explain to them, you know, that yes, you do want a small check. I mean, that yes, you do have some money somewhere else that you can live from because they seem to really worry about you. But
you always get the Christmas card. I hope you guys are doing okay.
Yeah.
With your $2.70 check. That's amazing. You're probably, I mean, I have to assume you're the only person in the history of the school district to have ever done that. So I can't imagine how many, they look at you like you have 27 heads when you walk in there, right?
One of my superintendents said, now, what are you doing? You got to explain this to me. So I guess the HR person talked to him, like, he has to sign off on those contribution statements, I guess, at some point. And that just kind of blew his mind. But yeah, it's unorthodox, you know, but this is why, and as we've talked about, you know, I didn't have a really good start financially in life. I got up to zero at 35. This is why if you start saving early and you have a buffer, and if you have, say, like a 457, like teachers have, this is why we deemed it the unfair advantage. That potentially could be a stream of income if you change jobs. Then you can accelerate your savings rate. And when you're maxing out or zeroing out paychecks, oh my Lord, that's crazy how much money you can save. So you know, I mean, I didn't think this was possible.
Yeah, you have a very comfortable lifestyle for, you know, right around $3,000 a month. And that's easy is what you said there. But we also just said you're not bringing anything home. Now, I know you just in passing mentioned how you're cannibalizing your 457 and you mentioned a 72T. Like, give our audiences, what does that mean practically? What are you actually living off of? Because you're not both having a $0 paycheck and having $3,000 a month. And there's a gap there, right? So help our audience understand where your revenue comes from.
Yeah. What do we live off of? Well, let's see. The first source of income that hits every January is we have a 72T distribution of a little more than $18,000 a year that hits every January. And that's from some previous IRAs. The 72T is a provision where basically you turn your IRA into like an annuity. Boy, that's some sexy talk, isn't it? but basically it means you can access your IRA before 59 and a half. Now, in hindsight, I don't know if I'd have done that, but we get $18,000 a year. We have older 457 plans from other jobs. So if we take, I don't know, let's just say we take $12,000 out of those, that leaves us with $30,000 a year in income. Okay. Now, we have since depleted those. We don't have any previous 457 jobs because, you know, it's all sitting in cash and we've taken it out. When my wife stops working this year, we'll have her 457 money that we'll be able to pull from. And that's how we are able to basically determine our own tax rate, you know, because we determine our income. So the 72T and 457 distributions, which you got to remember, 457 plans do not have, this is why they're special, they do not have pre-59 and a half penalty of 10%. That 10% penalty does not exist on 457s.
Yeah, that is huge. And amongst all of this, you are really controlling your tax rate down to almost $0 of federal tax, right? Because with all the contributions you're making pre-tax into these accounts by maxing them out or coming as close as you possibly can, you're lowering your taxable income on your actual wages down to virtually zero. And then whatever you're pulling out of these accounts, that is taxable income, but it sounds like a tiny amount. And then you're allowed the standard deduction now, which is significant. I'm right. I mean, am I to assume that your federal tax liability, it's got to be pretty close to zero?
Well, last year I did $40,000 IRA Roth conversion. So that was a big chunk of it. But yeah, you guys know from the free money articles, I think last year the free money amount was roughly $45,000 before I owe anything. So, you know, once you know that calculation, and that's always on that article, I do it for a lot of people. I do the charts, I'm saying. But at any rate, when you know that number, you know when your taxes start at the federal level. You've always got to deal with state taxes. But yeah, I don't owe a lot of tax. I think last year, even with $3,500 for federal, and that included like $40,000 Roth conversion. Does that sound right?
Yeah, and that was something you did voluntarily, obviously. This was a decision point from a position of strength. That's the cool thing, because you were already down in the lowest tax bracket.
Yes. Normal.
So that, again, when you're hearing that, that is a decision you made to optimize your finances from a position of strength.
Yeah, there was no surprise that I was going to owe tax. I knew I was going to owe tax. And you know, my accountant was like, my CPA was like, you're aware that you're going to pay tax? And I was like, yes, I'm aware. But I'd rather pay at that low rate, you know, when I got my income down. So yeah, it just gives you a lot of other options, you know, and I don't think I'll ever stop working this formula. You know, I hope to, in a few years, I guess I won't be working and I'll just be pulling money out within my tax paying threshold.
It's going to be so boring then. Oh, so many less buckets.
Yeah, well, you know, I've heard you guys talk about like, we get so used to savings and optimizing. What point do you start spending? Now, I don't want to be a drunken sailor in port, and I do not like going past that 12% bracket. But, you know, at some point, you got to pull it out. And maybe I'm thinking legacy wealth at this point. But I haven't really, you know, this is all new to me because you just get so used to saving so hard for so long. And I don't want to say it hurt to save like this. I have enjoyed my life the last 10 years. It's been kind of awesome because I don't worry about money. You know, I have a great lifestyle that I like and I'm saving hard. But now what? You know, got $1 million IRA. Got to do something with that, you know?
That's amazing.
Sounds like a to be continued to have you back on whenever you figure out now what indeed.
Jerry goes into drawdown.
Yes.
Wow, this has been fantastic. So I guess for our audience listening to this, I absolutely know this episode, the impact that this episode is going to have on the community, the shareability of this episode, how much people are looking for this information, and how hard it is to find it. So I think this will very quickly become one of our most downloaded episodes of all time, just because of how important it actually is as part of the college conversation. Jerry, individuals listening to this that want to connect with you, they want to find out more about your free money article, which has to do with controlling your tax rate. They want to talk more about CLEP. They just want to find out more about the article you said you're in the process of writing now. What is the best way for someone to connect with you and your content?
Easily, millionaireeducator.com. You can email me from that site. I have a small Twitter presence under @Ed_Mills_. I still have that. Sorry, everybody. But yeah, I'm not hard to find. Sometimes I get a little swamped in replying, but I'll try to get back to you.
Jerry, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. This has been great.
Thanks for having me, guys. Keep up your awesome work and keep helping people find their financial independence.
To our audience, if you got value from today's episode, go ahead and press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. It just lets the providers know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. And seriously, if you are at all interested in doing college in a more efficient manner, you know you got value. So don't keep it to yourself. Share it with a friend, a family member, an interested party. This is the most important conversation you could have around the cost of college. And this episode could be the perfect gateway to open up the possibility, saving yourself hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I am excited, so excited and grateful for Jerry for joining us on the show today. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast. where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.
And for those of you that had made a note or meant to go back and take a note about finding out more about this Salesforce career track, again, the link to get all that information is just chooseify.com/career. That's chooseify.com/career.